Hello everyone and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Dr. Dane Marco de Cesare and I'm the Data Manager and Coordinator at the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. I'll be facilitating the webinar today and I have a few reminders for you. All upcoming professional development offerings are listed on our webpage, nysrti.org. Copy of today's PowerPoint and handouts are available on the webpage and I've put the link in the chat box for you. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of today's presentation, I will post a link to a brief evaluation. We are very pleased to have Dr. Catherine Stahl with us today to present our third and final webinar in the Strand 18 series, Providing the Leading Edge, Early Comprehension Intervention. Today's topic is developing reading comprehension in pre-K to grade 2. Dr. Catherine Stahl is a clinical professor of literacy at New York University. Dr. Stahl studies the effective instruction of reading in the elementary years. She is committed to improving student achievement and school effectiveness, especially in urban settings. She is currently the director of the NYU Literacy Clinic. For over 25 years, Stahl has taught in high-poverty public elementary and middle school classrooms. The questions that she researches stem from those experiences and from current classroom observations. Her research examines reading acquisition and reading comprehension. Dr. Stahl has written 5 books related to literacy instruction. She earned her Ed.D. in reading education from the University of Georgia in 2003. Welcome, Dr. Stahl.
Thank you, Dane, and welcome to all of you this afternoon. I think this is going to be a really interesting webinar, and I'm so glad that you all are with us. Now, you can learn more about this topic. A webinar, just a 1 hour, is barely enough to get your feet wet on any topic, especially as one related to comprehension, which is so complex. So to learn more, perhaps you will be learning more and use this as a springboard for some work that you're doing at your school. To learn more, the details and test protocols that I will be talking about today can all be found in the book, Developing Reading Comprehension, Effective Instruction for All Students in Pre-K. And I also just want to mention that any of you who are working with English language learners, Georgia Garcia, who was the co-author on this book, she has devoted her entire life to working with English learners. And so we really, one of our ambitions in that book was really to present information that could also be used to help teachers of English learners enhance the comprehension of those students in the lower grade. So, you know, there's a wonderful chapter devoted to the topic, and there are sections in each and every chapter devoted to working with English learners. Also, as I said, I have also included a package of articles for you if you'd like to run and Xerox those now or to retrieve them now. You won't really need them during the presentation, but they will be something that will be, as you move forward in your own school or in implementing some of these ideas in your classroom, you may find it useful to refer to the more detailed information that might be found in the articles and in the chapters in the book. You might also look at some of the accompanying materials related to comprehension in general for young children. In 18.1 and 18.2, if you did not attend those webinars. And I also really want to strongly recommend webinar strand 9. I know many of you who are pre-K teachers, you know, had mentioned that you wanted more information about some of those kind of read-aloud techniques that we talked about in webinar 18.1. And I cannot encourage you strongly enough to look back at webinar strand 9, also on our RTI website in past webinars. And there is an entire strand devoted to improving dialogic reading in your classroom. And so that might be something of interest to you as an additional resource. So today we are going to talk about the children who need more. And, you know, now that we are emphasizing comprehension so much in the primary grades and in pre-K in light of the Common Core, we are beginning to be able to identify children, even at a very young age, who are needing more support in understanding text, even as a read aloud. And so today our first topic would be to discuss some diagnostic tools for actually identifying specific needs of children and how we might target in interventions to assist. We'll be talking about, you know, in all schools, resources are an issue, and that's just a given. So we'll be talking about how to create settings to meet these needs and who might be the providers to provide for these students. And we'll talk about research, specific research validated interventions. We're not even talking about research based here. We are talking, these are techniques that have been studied by researchers and have been found to be effective for both emergent readers. And by emergent readers, I mean those children who are not yet bound to the alphabetic system. These are children who you are likely to encounter in pre-K and before, any kind of pre-kindergarten, preschool setting, or early in kindergarten, or children who are not yet bound and have not yet had the alphabetic awareness that is binding them to text in their own emergent reading or their own attempts at reading a text. And then we also will provide some tips and research-validated interventions for novice readers. These are children who are beginning to be bound by text, although they are not yet at the fluent stage. They are, you know, beginning to learn about how words work. They might be in the partial alphabetic stage, full alphabetic stage, or even in the consolidated stage where they are able to fully analyze a word, but they're typically not really in a sophisticated way, analyzing multisyllabic words strategically, and they are certainly not reading, have not reached automaticity with, say, 100 words per minute yet in their reading of text. We consider that a novice reader. So I'd like to find out who you are. So Dane, if you can put our poll up so that people can share with me what role they play in their school or in their district. Oh, great. I'm glad that I see a large majority of classroom teachers, and I'm thrilled. Oh, my jewel of the school, we have a speech and language therapist with us today, and that is so, you know, your input. I hope that you will use this chat box throughout our presentation, because much of the information that I have acquired for this presentation has not even come from reading. It has come from the field of speech and language, which is such a valuable resource for us on this topic. Okay, but really where the grassroots work is going to be done in what we're talking about today is in the classroom. So that's great. And I'm glad to see we have, you know, we have so many people serving so many different roles. And it does take all of us to work together to meet these needs. So I'm so glad to see a nice mix of our within our group. Okay, so let's go to our next slide. With who are, so I'd like for you to tell me which grade, if you're a classroom teacher, which grade you work with, and if you are a specialist, maybe you might just put multiple grades. Oh, so most of you are grade 1 and 2. Very interesting. And kindergarten, good, because we have some really great tips today for the kindergarten folks, kindergarten and even pre-K. Okay, thank you. And so now we will, I'd like to know, I think I see a lot of new people today, which is fantastic. So I'd like to see what your background of experience is in what we've spoken about so far with early comprehension. Okay. Oh, good. So we do have a lot of people who have been to both. And again, a couple of, yeah, some people, yeah, I thought I noticed some new names today that I was not familiar with. Great. Okay, but even if you have been here before, I think this information today is going to be very new for all of us, because this is it's really a new area that has not been explored in a great detail. And so the first thing we need to do if we are thinking about whether children have comprehension challenges or not, and if they need an intervention, is that we need to have some comprehension assessments to not only determine whether a child is, does need additional support, and if so, what should that support look like? So the first thing I would like to say, and I probably should have put this in red letters, because English learners must be tested in their first language. There is no way that we can determine whether an English language learner has a comprehension difficulty if we're not exploring this in their first language. So that would certainly be the first thing. If they have good understanding and a good sense of narrative structure and can tell a story in sequence with episodes and a causal trajectory, if they can do that in their first language, they don't have a comprehension problem, all right? They are having, their language is still developing, and that's a different ball game. And so we certainly would want to be supportive of some of the comprehension challenges they are encountering, but it's not what we would consider technically a comprehension problem. Also, when we're talking about young children in pre-K, kindergarten, first grade, and even second grade, we cannot say that a child has a comprehension challenge or needs comprehension intervention unless we have had an assessment and measured and considered listening comprehension for anyone whose reading level is below third grade level. So that would be one of the other assessments that you would have to incorporate in your assessment package in making the determination. The other thing is, for those of you who have been with us on the last few comprehension seminar of the webinars, or even the ones in grades 4 through 6, comprehension is very murky. It is context and text dependent. And so, therefore, you must use more than one assessment task to determine if a student has a comprehension problem that requires intervention. And in these grade levels, that must always include listening comprehension. But let me say a word. This is an important bullet. Bullet 4 is very important when we're talking, and I saw several first and second grade teachers there. And so when many first and second grade classrooms are using benchmark kits to pinpoint students' text levels, those are essential in kindergarten, first and second grade. They are essential. The F&P benchmark kit, DRA, something like that is essential for determining a fine gradient of accurate reading. However, the lack of technical information available on those kits, poor inter-rater reliability, 3 different teachers could be hearing a tape of the exact same child performing a retelling, and I promise you, every one of those teachers using something like the F&P kit would come up with a different score on that child. There is horrible, horrendous inter-rater reliability on the F&P kit. Additionally, even the administration instructions, including the new third edition, and the scoring of those tasks result in them being totally unreliable indicators of comprehension abilities in novice readers. That is a very important point. And finally, and here we come to our speech and language person, please, I implore you, before you ever say that a child has a comprehension problem, I hope that you have already, at a minimum, conducted a listening comprehension test, have done 2 or 3 other kinds of listening tasks that I'm going to share with you in just a minute. And then the next step that you take before you jump the gun is you talk to your speech and language therapist. These people are experts in the area of comprehension and what kinds of developing skills contribute to someone to be able to engage in reading comprehension. And so I implore you to talk with them before ever jumping the gun and being concerned about a reading comprehension difficulty. There is not, another big important thing to remember is there is not a single defining task or score when measuring comprehension. Comprehension is dynamic, multidimensional, and nonlinear. If we think about individual kids, the comprehension is going to vacillate depending on how much support is provided in a classroom. Is the teacher reading the text? Are kids reading it together in a small group? Are partners reading the text? What kind of reading context is it? All of that will contribute to a different levels of comprehension. What is the purpose for reading? You could say to a kid, let's read, you know, I would like you to read this passage, give them a template about whales, and they would have to figure out the weight of the whale that they're reading about, the length of the whale, what ocean the whale lives in, and what food the whale eats, and who the whale's enemies are. And a child could read a very complex, high-level text, but perfectly comprehend it for that purpose. So purpose influences comprehension. The text genre and the concepts within a text are going to influence comprehension. And in terms of readers, the prior knowledge that a reader brings to every single text influences the comprehension. So a text could be at a level K, but if their cold reading of that F&P benchmark kit, if their cold read and their text level is an I, but they know a lot about the topic, I can promise you that kid can read the level K text. Vocabulary, which often goes along with prior knowledge, working memory, and self-regulation. A lot of times we put kids sitting there by themselves reading, and their mind wanders, you know. So what kind of self-regulation do they have? However, if we put them with us and they're reading in a small group, even if they're reading silently, they may be more attentive. Very young children, often their attention is better if they're reading out loud. It helps them stay focused on it. As long as they know that they're going to be held accountable for answering questions about it later. However, often in a situation like, say, an F&P benchmark kit, the test, they're being given the test, the little first grader reads like a champ. They sound beautiful. They're proud. They've finished reading. And then all of a sudden, somebody says to them, you know, they think they're done. They did a beautiful performance. And then somebody says, retell everything you remember about the story. Talk to me about everything that happened in this story. And so then they may not be remembering as much as they possibly could. So all of these things contribute to comprehension. It's not like phonics where you can do a once and done test. This is a very complex process. A single task cannot determine the need for intervention or provide instructional indicators. So you need multiple individually administered tasks to determine the nature of the comprehension difficulty and the severity of it. Now, this you're talking about a lot of work. You're talking about an investment in time. So these tasks have got to be reserved for a handful of children in a cohort. We cannot just be doing these assessments that I'm going to describe with you on the next slide to 8 kids in a classroom. Not going to happen. You don't have the time. You don't have the resources. So some of the diagnostic tools for identifying comprehension difficulties in pre-K to grade 2, and these are based on some other research studies that have been done. Oh, thank you, Kim. I bet you are our speech and language person. See, we rely on these people. Exactly, the receptive language skills. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this. And see, and these are things that we have got to consider. So some of the things before we ever get into reading, things like a video recall. This is what researchers, many of the speech and language and cognitive researchers who work with young children, do assessments on using a video story. And then we ask the same kinds of questions that we would ask if we were asking questions about a passage. And so, for example, when we talk about story grammar focused questions, there's questions that have to do with characters. How is the setting important? Where did it happen? But how is that important to the story? And then causal links, events, how does one event contribute to another event? And what they contribute to the story. So all those kind of story grammar questions that we ask when we're reading stories aloud or when children are reading. There's also the emergent storybook reading that's based on Elizabeth Soulsby's work, the Soulsby Scale. And this is conducted after you have read a story multiple times to children. And you would use this would be done with a pre-K or early kindergarten child. And then you would call that child aside and ask them to do a pretend reading of the text. And there is a scale, and this scale can be found in both my assessment book that is co-written with Mike McKenna, as well as it can be found in that book that I wrote with Joey Garcia. The actual, you can just Xerox it, and there is a scale of whether children are attending or are able to follow that narrative or whether they're looking at each page separately. And so this is a very good indicator. One of the tests that has become more popular among researchers and is also found in both the assessment book by Mike McKenna and me and also in the developmental book, but this would be something that you would have to develop by yourself, the narrative. Let me see. The narrative wordless, the comprehension of a wordless picture book. There are three subtests as part of this. You hand a book, and you would make a script for this. These are not in kits. The Soulsby Scale and the wordless picture book, you would have to create a script for this yourself. And the wordless picture book has three parts to it. The first part is the child goes through and does a picture walk. You record what the child is saying, how they're creating a story as they go on, whether they're using prediction, whether they're using strategies like our regular comprehension strategies, correction, self-monitoring, predicting, inferences, whether they're connecting the story events or whether they're just telling it picture by picture by picture as separate as like captions. And so that would be part one, the picture walk that the child goes through. And you're taking notes, and there's a form where you would take the notes. Then the second one is you pull the story away from the child, and you ask them to then do a retelling of it. And you are noting all those story grammar elements that they are including in that story. The third thing you would do is now you have your questions that are key to particular story grammar elements and related inferences about the story. And then you have these scripted out and planned in advance, and then you would go through and ask them those questions. And this is whether their sense of a narrative, which is essential for being able to understand narrative text. When we get to K1, what's more valuable to you or I would say equally valuable as that retelling that children are doing, because often at the early levels, anything from levels A through G doesn't really have a comprehensive story structure. It can actually make it harder for a child to retell because there's nothing to latch on to. So what you do want to do is you want to make sure that you are doing regular running records and you are looking at your meaning, structure, visual analysis of errors. And are the errors that the child is making ignoring meaning and over-relying on the alphabetic system? And are they self-monitoring that the story or the informational text they're reading at those low levels has to make sense? And it's that orchestration. And this is where sometimes that falls apart, because it's a real juggling act for children who are beginning to learn the alphabetic system. And it's likely that they might go through a stage where they over-rely on the alphabetic system and forsake the good meaning that they were using back when they were able to display a solid reading in something like the Sulsby scale or in the pretend reading that they engaged in. And so this is, at some point, it's developmental, but we need for children to get over that hump, and we need to, the way they get over that hump is direct instruction. You would also want to include a listening capacity test using the qualitative reading inventory, which is the gold standard. And so, for example, you might pick some early passages out of that, and they have some, they have a very good sample of, they have questions that have been tested with samples of students. They're not just questions that have been made up and never tested. We have technical data on those questions in the QRI, so it makes that test a much more valid test than what most people are using. And then for those second graders, you know, people who are kids who are reading at that level, you do want to use the QRI 6. If you really think that a second grader is having some comprehension problems, then you want to use, and if they're reading at the second, however, if they're at, if they're able to accurately read second grade material, but they're not able to tell you what's happening, and they've had some very good instruction about comprehension, and they've had at their small reading group have had to retell the stories every day instructionally, and they still are not getting it, then you want to go to the QRI 6 as well. And these things will also, you're not going to get a hard and fast number of a score like you might in something your speech and language teacher might have some nice norm tests for you to use. But these are going to provide some good cues for what instruction needs to look like for these kids. Now, big question. Well, who does the comprehension intervention? Schools don't have many resources. So who is going to do it? Well, foundational skills are linear, all right? Classroom teachers do not have the time to provide the level of repetition and backtracking and slowing down of the curriculum in foundational skills. And by that, I mean phonics, phonemic awareness. And so if kids are getting really behind in those skills that are developing along that linear pathway, then, and those kids who are slow at developing those skills need a lot of repetitions. They may need the multi-sensory methods. A classroom teacher just can't do that. So you've got to have your interventionist helping you with those foundational skills. That's also, if you're using any kind of CBMs in your RTI process, that's also what's showing up on your screening measures because they're easy to test. So your interventionist is probably, the interventionists at your school are probably consumed with doing those foundational skills. And because we also need to make sure that kids, by the time they finish second grade, that they have, in terms of word study, that their phonics and spelling are in place and consolidated through long vowels by the end of second grade. Consolidated. Not just approximations or sometimes. They need to be consolidated by the end of second grade. The intervention is the one, the interventionist is probably the one doing that and doing the heavy lifting on that. High frequency words in 1 second. By the time kids get to the end of second grade, they should be able to read all those Deutsch words or the Fry words through 300. That should be of Fry, not that should be or Fry, through the first 300 words, all right, by the end of second grade. Each in 1 second, 1 second, 1 second, all right. It is probably the interventionist who, for the kids who are not mastering that in the classroom, the interventionist is probably doing the heavy lifting there. And at the end of second grade, we want all kids at an oral reading fluency by 90 words correct per minute. Now, unless classroom teachers are going to rearrange the classroom structure somehow and take on some of these tasks, the burden for comprehension instruction is probably best taught by the classroom teacher. And there are a lot of reasons for that. One of the reasons is simply because it's not linear, all right? Comprehension is best taught within your themed content unit. So if you're doing a unit on plants, that's the place to teach comprehension. If you're doing your themed unit on famous Americans and American symbols, that's the place to teach your comprehension, all right? It's best taught because that's where you can ensure that kids have the core knowledge that they need in order to comprehend the text. Themed units also provide the repeated exposure to vocabulary that promotes comprehension and fluent reading. Now, what you will need to do also is this is where the read-alouds are being taught, not in the intervention setting. So these read-alouds and the shared reading are the central daily blocks for teaching comprehension, not the 15-minute guided reading time, okay? For young children, that teacher read aloud and the shared reading are crucial for comprehension. If this structure is followed with vigilance and that you're really heavy-hitting comprehension in the teacher read aloud, following it with small group discussions of what you did in the read aloud, doing really good instruction of a theme in the shared reading, getting kids to answer the questions, and giving explicit comprehension structure instruction. Not just asking questions, but teaching kids how to make a prediction, teaching kids how to make a summary or to how to do a retelling, and not just throwing the story map up and expecting them to be able to fill it in. Much more is needed. So basically, the classroom teacher is the one who is going to be able to provide the intervention to the neediest kids because you have the content for it. One of the things I want to say a word about is in the paired teacher classrooms. Many times when I go into paired teacher classrooms during read-alouds, and I go into a lot, I often see one teacher reading aloud and the other member of the pair walking around helping the kids to pay attention and to stay tuned, stay engaged, I said to a group of kindergarten teachers when we were debriefing, I said, I noticed you had two teachers in there. One was walking around, one was doing the read aloud. Why weren't both of you doing the read aloud? I'm just curious. And the answer was, we don't have two copies of the book. And I said, that really doesn't matter. You know, each of you do a different book, all right? And divide the kids in half. So now instead of 25 kindergartners sitting there, now you've got a group of 12 kindergartners in each group, and they have double the chance now for participation. You only have to do half the week or half the work because now you're going to swap books. I mean, you're going to swap groups on day two. So you are, you know, you're cutting the teacher's work in half, and you are doubling the participation and the comprehension of the children. That is a win-win situation. Whenever there are, if you're doing comprehension and there are two adults in the room, the class needs to be divided in two. We need children talking during comprehension instruction. We need children who need to talk the most having more opportunity to engage. The speech and language specialist, as I said, knows a lot about how to approach what the children's needs are related to receptive language skills, related to listening skills, related to how to build narratives, and just general language development aspects that contribute to comprehension and the expression of comprehension. Because none of us are putting kids in an MRI to figure out what they've understood. So the only way we know that they're understanding is what they are expressing. So this, both the receptive language and the expressive language, are really big factors in when we're talking about comprehension. It's the whole ball game, and that speech and language specialist is your best friend. Volunteers and parents. For any schools who are lucky enough to have volunteers, one of the best things you can do is have them do a repeated read aloud of something you read with your class, and then conduct a small group discussion of it. The whole ball game is getting these kids talking in small groups about the text. Bilingual and ENL, or ENL teachers, and also the reading specialist. Well, when and where do we find the time for this? I mean, they're always, again, the resources and the time are limited. We're constrained. There's no doubt about it. So your structure is going to depend on your available resources. Typically, the classroom teacher is the best person to serve as the gatekeeper and overseer of services to support the comprehension needs of pre-K to grade 2 students. You may or may not be the provider of the supports. However, you are going to be the overseer. And often, and you know, interventions can be really pretty easy to implement. It just is taking the form of a repeated small group read aloud with small group discussions of the text for language reticence and English and ENL students. Most interventions, now the good news, this is the great news. At our level, K2, all these interventions can be provided in 15-minute modules because you don't want to lose the kids. You want those kids to be engaged and be attentive, and the reality is 15 minutes is all you've got. So there are some families of interventions I'd like to share with you. The families of interventions are those having to do with narratives for pre-K and kindergarten. And basically, that's a dialogic reading intensive with inference training. And then we have an informational content intensive that has been tested in pre-K and kindergarten, and also up into first grade. And these are World of Words by Susan Newman, Pay for Success. We're going to go into these in great detail. And I went and put those two share a lot of common characteristics. So Joey Garcia and I put them together into a 2-week lesson plan that you could use that combines all the characteristics of World of Words and Pay for Success. And then for second graders, those of you, I was glad to see lots of second grade teachers today. And because we have some good stuff that we can use with second graders that has a strong research base and is perfect for our little readers. Okay, so let's take a look. The dialogic reading intensive with inference training for pre-K and K is, first of all, you know, and this is all the research that's been done, as you see, lots and lots of research, both in the field of reading and in the field of speech and language. So basically, you conduct a small group dialogic reading 2 to 4 days a week each session is 15 minutes. For the youngest and the neediest, you would begin with very brief kinds of books, you know, your very unsophisticated picture books. And basically, the acronym helps you remember that you want to prompt kids to talk about each page as you're going through it, to talk about the book. You want to evaluate and expand what they are saying in a positive way. You know, doing a lot of that language expansion is really what it's all about, and repeating what they're saying to you. And that's peer. That's what peer stands for. And then as the texts become a little more complex, you know, you're really, now you want to get into some stories, some simple stories that you want to stimulate more expanded responses using CROWD, the acronym CROWD. This is all what dialogic reading is, where you actually can just ask the child to complete a sentence. Yes, that fruit is a, And then the child would say, a strawberry, or that fruit is an apple, okay? That's at the most basic level, that, you know, where we want to really go beyond that. Or you might ask a simple recall question. Then we really want to always make sure, though, that we're including some open-ended prompts, open-ended questions, and then those WH questions, you know, who did such and such, or where do you think they're going to go, or where did this story called the seed happen? And then distancing prompts and the use of decontextualized talk. And that means decontextualized means you want the child talking in relationship to the story, but in something that is not in the immediate context. It's not here, it's not now. And you're getting them to talk about maybe something on that topic that happened at a different time, a different place. All right, without the aid of the pictures or the video. One of the things you want to make sure that you're doing is really make sure that you are including stories, whether you're doing this in a story book, in a print form, or in a video, that have that comprehensive story structure, you know, that really has, you know, a problem or a goal, a set of episodes that are clearly trying to accomplish the goal or trying to solve the problem, and then a clear resolution. You want it to have that comprehensive story structure. This is where we get into trouble with those early A levels, A, B, C, D, E. They don't have that comprehensive story structure. And a structure, a child only has to remember the last event, because that event triggers the next event. And then they remember the next event, and it triggers the next event. But when you don't have a good story structure, it actually makes it harder for the kids in the low-level text to remember it. You also want to stop intermittently to ask literal and inferential questions that address story grammar elements if we're talking about stories. Your prompts and cued recall are actually the precursor to what teachers in second grade are going to do when they begin teaching kids the strategies. You know, how to make a visual image. You know, in kindergarten, you might be saying to a kid when you do the read aloud, you say, I'm going to wait to show you the picture until after you make your own picture in your mind. And then you read the page, then you say to the kid, you know, say to the child or to the children, what picture did you make in your mind when I read the page? Describe your picture to me. And what did you see in your mind? And then you say, what words helped you make that picture? With second graders, you're actually going to teach them the strategy of how to make a mental image. And so these questions that you're asking in pre-K and kindergarten and first grade are the precursor to later cognitive strategy instruction. And you've got to craft and script your questions. You've only got the kids' attention for 15 minutes. You do not have time to wing it and to be asking four questions to lead up to the question that is really the point of the story and the takeaway that the author wanted the children to take away from the story. So in order for you to really get through your lesson in a timely way, these questions have got to be scripted by you. They've got to be crafted. You can't do it when you're on the fly. You've got to do it at home when you're sitting at the end of the day drinking your cup of tea with your little cookies or drinking your glass of wine, and, you know, and then craft those questions, get rid of half of them, and then bring them to your read aloud. I encourage you to incorporate multimedia. Use videos. If you look at the inference generation article, how to foster inference generation in the youngest children, you've got that article. I think that I sent it for this webinar, and I know I sent it for the last webinar or the first webinar in this strand. But there's actually a lesson script that you can follow that's ready to go. It's using the video on YouTube called The Frog Prince, and it has all of the questions scripted out and stopping points for you. There's actually a lesson, a 15-minute lesson that you can follow to that shows you how to use video to get kids to generate high-level inferences. And it's great because it helps sustain their attention and engagement. Also, train parents. When you have parent events, train them how to do dialogic reading. But we also want them, in this era of technology, they want videos. You want to be making videos of read-alouds for your parents and demonstrating what good read-alouds look like and putting it on your website, putting it up on your school website for parents to go to. Parents use these things now, so please do that. Now, when we think about also the informational content intensive, so often comprehension relies on kids having world knowledge, prior knowledge. And if you've ever said, my children just don't have the prior knowledge to answer these comprehension questions, then these interventions are for you. Susan Newman has done a wonderful set of research studies on her program called World of Words. And also Paula Schwanenflugel and her team have done something fairly similar. You know, there are several connecting links here, something called Paved for Success. Now, these are essentially vocabulary interventions, but they're building kids' prior knowledge. Now, some of the things that are common threads between these two units or these protocols, both protocols, both Susan Newman and Paula Schwanenflugel, they built units around a 5 to 10 day content theme. They picked targeted vocabulary for each theme, and then they used picture cards. And you might want to jot this down on your notes. If you want to use picture cards to teach vocabulary, Freddie Hebert's website called Text Project, www.text.org, maybe. I don't know. You can look up Text Project. It has a whole library of picture cards for every vocabulary word you can imagine. So you can use that as a resource if you plan to do this or for any vocabulary teaching that you're engaging in. And this builds bridge. It bridges what the known is about the topic to the unknown about the topic. And it's a comprehensive approach that includes multiple exposures to a cluster of words around a semantic cluster of words around a common topic using very short read alouds, using explicit instruction, and small group conversations. And then there are extension activities that engage kids in writing, drawing, and categorizing. And also, what was interesting is both these programs also included, threw in a little phonological awareness through songs and poems and videos related to the common topic. Now, if you would like to learn more about the world of words, this book actually tells you all the details you would want to know about it, and it has many, many, many sample lessons. They have also developed it, I think, into a kit now. And so you can go to this website and find more about the kit. Let me back up a minute. Also, Paved for Success, this book by Hamilton and Schwanenflugel that you see pictured called Paved for Success, this is also a book. And it has about 25 or 30 sets of weekly lessons to do Paved for Success. So this is, if you want to get this just up and running and in your class and get it moving, these are two resources that you might investigate. Now, let's say you want to just do it on your own and fit it into a 15-minute module that you want to develop in your classroom as a 15-minute module. You know, maybe you're even going to have your parapro do this. So if you, what you would do, and this is what Joey Garcia and I took their ideas, and we said, okay, basically, in a 10-day or a 2-week module, each day, this is how you would allocate the time. you would be doing you would open each lesson with a quick poem or song or a rhyme. You would have a video about the topic with discussion. All you have to do is YouTube both, and you will be amazed at how many quick little one-minute videos you have of all the different kinds of boats imaginable. These fit in perfectly with these little lessons because it's giving kids the visual. Then you do a quick little read aloud with discussion. You review the picture cards and get the kids to say the words or sort the word, the pictures, or play Time for a Challenge where they're having to answer a question about the which you ask a question and they find which picture answers the question. Conversation groups are very important. But it's only a five-minute conversation group, but it's getting these kids talking. The kids are doing the talking, you are not, and then a writing or drawing about the topic. And you go, how in the world could we fit all that in? There is no way we can fit all that in into 10 days. And here is, and this is actually very strongly based on what Susan Newman did in hers. I mean, it's about the same number of activities. 15 minutes is all it takes for each day, okay? Dr. Stahl, what was his name? I'm not sure who. Text Project, yes, okay. Yeah, that's Elfrieda Hebert. Yes, it's her, great. Thank you so much, Dawn. Yes, thank you so much. Okay, the YouTube videos, let's say you are teaching your children transportation. Okay, you're doing a unit on transportation. That would be a logical kind of unit. That might be one of Susan Newman's and also Paula Schwanenflugel's units, transportation. You go into YouTube and you say boat, B-O-A-T. You will see some quick little videos of speedboats, sailboats, riverboats. And so you just show these videos to the kids and then have a discussion about them and or any kind of topic. Or let's say your topic is plant. Then you would go in and you might find a YouTube video of a plant, and it might be time-lapsed and it's growing, and then you could label the parts of the plant through the video. The videos are really, you know, you're using that so children have a visual and also stay engaged. I hope that helps. But those programs are really, you could use those and be pretty much ready to go by buying either one of their books and setting that up even with, like I said, not even you. You could set up that would be a great way to use a teaching assistant. Very productive, very productive. Okay, comprehension strategy. Now, here we're talking about first grades and second grade. You know, we're talking about kids who are reading. And so, you know, maybe you're second graders. Here are some comprehension strategy intensives for novice readers. These are kids that are bound to the alphabetic system. Now we're moving into they are reading maybe at levels G, H, and above, okay? Probably level H and above. And so some of the things, here are three strategies that have very, very robust research bases. More than one study has been done on all of these, okay? So the most popular one is the collaborative strategic reading. This is a small group intervention, and also this Allison Boardman, some of you may have attended the regional training conducted by Allison Boardman on collaborative strategic reading. I think her focus this year was on upper grades, so many of you may not have seen it. Some of you literacy specialists may have attended, but there's also going to be an upcoming webinar on that, on this topic. And so small group, this is a small group intervention after you have taught the individual comprehension strategies individually, all right? It has a very strong research base with children who have reading difficulties as well as children who have an IEP with specified disabilities. It also, the research has also been done with our English new learners. And the children divide, they read a text that you have divided into sensible sections, and then they apply the four collaborative strategic strategies to comprehend informational. And I think this also works with a narrative text. And so here are the strategies. Here are the four strategies. And here are some articles you can find. First, the kids preview the text, and you would activate they would activate prior knowledge and make purposeful predictions before reading. As they're reading, they might annotate or note when they were clicking. That means reading. So this is really a monitoring. You know, you're teaching them the strategy of how to monitor for unknown words and how to monitor for unknown ideas or confusing ideas. A click means you're reading along, you understand, the words are flowing, and also I'm understanding what I read. The clunk is when I don't understand, or even there's a word that I can't pronounce that seems essential to understanding. And so the children use those terms. I clicked when I was reading about such and such. I clunked because I didn't understand such and such. Then they retell for each section. They would retell the key ideas of that section. And then finally, so then you would repeat that cycle for each section. At the end, you would do a wrap-up, where there is some questioning and summarizing. And you're basically teaching the children how to do this. You are modeling and doing it with them, but eventually you're wanting them to be able to, and the intervention would look like this. You would certainly be doing this in your group. You know, if you're working with on-level readers, they can actually use a protocol like this for some small group work, all right? So you might actually have a couple groups of kids doing this as a student-led group, but you are working with the kids who need intervention in your group, following this well-researched protocol. Also, a compare-contrast. Joanna Williams has done lots of research with second graders and comprehension. And one of the things that she researched is a compare-contrast structure protocol. And now this is more extensive. This you would actually do with your classroom. You know, let's say you are teaching in a high-poverty setting where you have lots of kids that have comprehension difficulties, and you really want to do some explicit instruction in the strategies and in text structure. So you would read a text that compares, let's say you're reading a text that is comparing frogs and comparing toads. You would then teach them the clue words that for the compare contrast text structure. You would discuss the ideas in the text, and you would complete a feature analysis to compare what shared and unique features of that whether it's the frog and the toad, or whether it's maybe even different things. You know, you're reading a book about snakes I've seen books about African tigers and Asian tigers. And so you would have a feature analysis to compare those members of that category. And then you would have the children write using the information from the text in how to compare and contrast. This is really important because I'll be honest with you, every single ELA test nowadays asks kids to do this. And so it's a good idea for us to start with them younger, when they're younger, with some of these simple descriptive texts and get them to recognize the text structure and then know how, with a very simple text, to participate in this cognitive activity. Here is a kind of structure that if you were doing plants, two plants that are alike, and you would provide a frame like this for them to write in. Two plants that are alike are the black-eyed Susan and the sunflower. They are alike in some ways, they both, and then the children would tell what they both have as commonalities, and then the other ways they are different. The sunflower, such and such, the daisy, or the black-eyed Susan, such and such. And so keeping it very simple and keeping it very visible for kids so kids can really own this. And then the next one is really one of my favorites. Theme identification is an essential skill, and I don't care if we get rid of the Common Core standards or get rid of certain grade level standards. Theme identification is not going anywhere. Neither is this. Neither is compare contrast. These things aren't going anywhere. Kids will always need know how to identify a theme. And generating a theme calls for more than summarizing a story. It's more than a summary. It calls for making connections to the human experience, because that's what a theme is. It's something that is a common human experience that is presented in many different kinds of books, all right? But it taps onto a part of our heart that all human beings share, or a part of our moral fabric. And children, in order for children to identify a theme, it's sort of abstract. In order for kids to identify a theme, they have to make connections to other stories they've read. They have to target and zone in on what they think that author's purpose is, which is a standard in itself. And then they have to be able to retrieve human experiences that tap into that, that make it universal. Young children have sensitivity to themes, but they may have trouble putting it into words or generating it spontaneously. So what Joanna Williams did is she actually taught them, here are some common themes that we've seen in many books. All right, and so she taught them, here are some themes that are likely to show up. Be honest. Never give up. Accept those who are different. Don't be greedy. I'll bet each of us could list five books or five kids' stories that our kids read or that we read to them that exemplify those themes. All right? So she taught them the themes, and then so they read the story, and then she has children discuss these kinds of theme-based questions. You know, was what happened in the story good or bad? Why was it good? Why? What things were good? What things were bad? But here are some questions that I think really tap in and are different than just your generic trying to teach kids a theme. I think we mostly all of us do, what do you think the main lesson was that the characters learned? Okay? We ask that of kids a lot. We also often ask kids, what do you think we should learn from what happened in this story? And I think we could probably do that as teachers more frequently than we do, and do it in a small group a lot more frequently than we do. And then asking kids, these are the things that I think really transfer and really hit this out of the park. When is it important to do such and such, to be honest, or you know, to when is it's important, and then the next question, when is it hard? When is it hard to be honest? Or how about that story? And it's skipping my mind now. I can't think of the title of it, but it was about the little girl who got in trouble for telling a lie, and then her mother, you know, punished her for telling a lie, and then she started being just so frank with people that she was hurting people's feelings, people were getting angry with her, and so, you know, that's when you say, yes, we always want to be honest, but are there times when we maybe should massage our, you know, when we shouldn't be quite, you know, as honest, you know, and avoid, you know, saying things that are hurtful in the name of honesty. And so those kinds of discussions are really what get at themes and help children to transfer them to their own private reading and to really understand what a theme is. And then asking kids, what are other movies or stories that you know about that have that same theme? And so again, it's expanding the context to really make clear to a kid what a theme really is and what that means to be a theme. So as we finish our today and our series on the early comprehension, some big ideas about comprehension intervention for young children. You know, here are some of the big ideas, some of the big takeaways. And you'll see these come from not just reading educators. They come from special education, and they come from cognitive psychology, and they come from speech and language. One-to-one intervention is always best. But in comprehension interventions, we don't want the group to exceed three or four children, because we want talking is so much a part of it. And we've got to have the kids doing the majority of the talking in any comprehension intervention that we are providing. We should actually tape ourselves and make sure we are talking less than they are. We know that interventions with younger children tend to yield larger effects than interventions as we get with the older kids. And especially with comprehension, it gets very murky. Once kids get to third grade, we've got texts that are long. We've got texts that are on concepts they don't know. The decoding and the fluency are intruding, and we can't, it all becomes a very muddled, dynamic mess. And so if we can parse out before we get to second grade, and we can really target some of these language and comprehension needs early on, we will be supporting that children, that child and those children in later comprehension. And certainly that goes even more so for our English learners. We shouldn't just put them aside and say, oh, well, they're getting help from the ENL teacher. They don't need, you know, double the service. They do need it, and that's why I'm suggesting that a lot of this should be happening in the classroom. No, we don't want kids running in and out of the room, the poor things, you know, never spending time in their home base, in their secure, safe classroom. We want kids staying in that classroom with you classroom teachers as much as possible. That's where security is. That's where safety is. That's their home base. And so let's provide some of this to them in the home classroom. Now, we also want to incorporate retelling and cued responses. We need to do both for young kids. We need to have them do both retelling and asking them questions. All right. That always has to be a measure of comprehension. And I want to, in talking about this retelling business, in kindergarten, first grade, children should be telling those little leveled texts that they read every day. They should be retelling probably two of those to a partner every day. If you are giving them that much practice retelling after they read those quickie little books, you know, that have, you know, 16 little pages or 8 pages and 50 to 60 words, if you get them in the habit of retelling them, we are going to begin minimizing the number of kids who, once they get to second grade, can't retell. Or once they get to the benchmark test session, can't retell. Let's do retelling every day. And let's include multiple readings of the same text. For those of you who are parents, you know how much your children love to hear stories retold. You know how much we as adults get out of reading a book, say a spiritual book that we cling to, or for those in recovery, when you read a book from recovery and you say, gee, I know I've read this before, but I didn't remember it. Our comprehension, even as adults, increases every time we read something. Based on where we are experientially, texts take on new and added meaning for us. So let's try not to be whizzing through and see, oh, gee, as a kindergarten teacher or with my domain materials, they have me reading 6 books a week. It's okay for you to read 3 books a week and read them multiple times. Second grade teachers, it's okay for you to do one book aloud with the kids during the week and retrieve some of those books that are on that list in your domain to do with the kids as shared reading. These are all some of the ways that we can enhance comprehension by tweaking what we're already doing, all right? But by doing it a little more effectively, a little more deliberately with comprehension in mind. So often I like for my closing thoughts to be, let's try to do more by doing less, by doing less. So we do have some time for questions. While you're typing in your questions that you might have, this was a lot of material, and this is very new, cutting edge. You know, it's only been since we have welcomed the Common Core and the emphasis on comprehension in the Common Core in the primary grades that this has become has sort of risen as an issue for us, you know, that we really want to attend to. So, you know, this may be the first place that you've heard some of these ideas. And so it's just a springboard for future work that you and I can do together or that you can do in your school with your professional learning communities. This is a very good topic for learning more with your colleagues. So while you're typing some questions, I know you must have some questions or some things that you would like to add to this conversation. I just want to thank you. You know, this is the last webinar that I will be doing this year. And you can always revisit any of the other webinars or revisit this one. You know, there was a lot of material in this one. Go back and revisit it at your own pace. You can fast forward. But I want to tell you, I want to thank you for attending this webinar and the others that I've presented this year. And I want to tell you how grateful I am for the job that you all do. And here you are, 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock, still working and being, you know, so that I know that you are the folks that are going back and empowering children through increased reading achievement. You know, this is what we do to really, you know, reading is so important in changing lives. Not one of us would be doing it if we didn't believe it. And so, I want to tell you I am so grateful. In Thanksgiving, it's a good time to tell you how grateful I am for what you are doing in your work with children. And please, let's keep this conversation going. Please feel free to contact me anytime to support you as you initiate your own personal learning. Email me with questions or school-based learning if you'd like me to come and work with your school. My mission is always to do more walking than talking in changing the lives of children. So thank you so much for being with us. Oh, thank you, Kathleen. That's so sweet. There's a lot more for us all to learn together on this topic, and I hope we will. I hope this is just the beginning of our journey together on this topic. Thank you, Dawn, and thank you for the time you and the others have devoted for these 3 sessions. I know it's late in the day after a full day of work, so I am so appreciative to you all hanging in there. Your children are so lucky to have you. And happy Thanksgiving to all of you. I hope you will be sure to fill out. Dane, do you want to chime in about the, we have the survey, right? Do we have the survey available for them to take?
Yep, I also want to thank everyone for participating in the webinar series. I have just posted a link to the survey, and we really appreciate your feedback. We look at it, and it definitely informs what we do for future webinars. So we really appreciate just taking a moment and just filling out the survey for us.
Yes, please provide feedback on the survey. That's very useful to us as we think about future webinars, things that are meaningful and important to you. And as I said, please do not hesitate to contact me to continue this conversation. Okay, so we have a question coming in. You just go to Natalie and Stephanie, you go to the website and look under, Dane, why don't you, it's like under professional development and then past webinars.
Yep, if you go to our website, and I'm going to post the website right here. So you go to this website and you go under professional development, and today this session will be under current webinars, but tomorrow it'll automatically move to past webinars. And then you could find this strand. You can also, it'll say 18, strand 18, session 3. You could go back and look for session 2 in strand 18, session 1. There's other sessions that Dr. Stahl has done, as well as a variety of other professionals. So make sure that you use that as a resource. Dr. Allison Boardman, who Dr. Stahl had mentioned in the webinar today, has a small strand that's posted on there as well that you can go and look at. So there's lots of resources for everyone. All right, and with that being said, once again, thank you so much. I'm going to go ahead and close out the webinar. And if you have any questions, feel free to send them along. Oh yeah, the website name, yep, it is that nysrti.org. So it's the New York State Response to Intervention Technical Assistance Center. So I will type that out for you.
Yeah, so you go to that website, Stephanie, see where it says, see under Dane's note, HTTPS, right where it says HTTPS /nysrti.org, all the stuff is there. And if you look in the right-hand corner, it's sort of hard to find. There are three lines. You don't see it come up right away, but you look in, there are three lines, and you tap that, and that's where your menu comes. Thank you all very much, and please remember to fill out the very brief survey.
All right, and once again, thank you, everyone, and I'm going to go ahead and end today's webinar. So thanks again.
Thank you, Dane.
No problem. Thank you.